Hello, everyone. I'm Darian Gold, and welcome to All Things Pilates Season 5. There is a collective fascination with Joe Pilates, his method, and inventions. The exercise paradigm continues to evolve, as does our understanding of Joe's genius. So join us, because we know there is always more to explore. As America continues to grapple with its cultural and racial challenges, our very own Pilates community is still experiencing these divisive issues. With us today are Rayana Salahuddin and Rachel Gray, co-owners of Pilates School San Francisco. Classically trained and eternally curious, Rayana and Rachel have created a unique business model designed to welcome students who otherwise couldn't afford Pilates classes, and more specifically, those in the Black, Brown, and LGBTQ communities. Ray and Ray, as they are known, have vision, heart, determination, and are also two of my most faithful students. Here to share their Pilates goals and ambitions are Ray and Ray.
Hi.
Hello.
I know you both are busy building your empire, so I appreciate you taking the time today. Rachel.
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
Mostly in Berkeley, actually. I was born in Washington State, but my family moved me down here when I was 11 or so. That was a little bit of a change for me. But I'm pretty much a Californian. My very first apartment was in Lower Haight, San Francisco. So
you went from Berkeley to San Francisco.
Yeah. So
no detour.
I mean, I've moved around quite a bit. I lived in London for a couple years. I've lived in New York for a while, but I keep coming back here. This is home. Probably will always be home.
Rayana, what about you?
Same. California kid, San Franciscan until it sinks into the sea.
Uh-oh. Well, we hope that's not going to happen anytime soon. Mm. Other things can sink, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, just not San Francisco.
Yeah.
Now we have to build little pool floaties around San Francisco.
How did the two of you find Pilates? And then how did the two of you meet?
I started doing Pilates back when I was an athlete in the 1990s. I happened to get a physical therapist who I didn't know was a classical Pilates teacher and fixed my shoulder so I could play. Then once I graduated, you know, got all my, you know, degrees, then I was looking for a way to retire from coaching that I could still continue my passion of teaching. And I went looking for a Pilates certification, and I ended up getting a contemporary cert because I didn't know that. No one told me that this is classical, it's contemporary. Did that, taught, and then realized it's not really how I wanted to be teaching, and sought out more different training, which is how I found Pilates Center of San Francisco, and learned that these were the exercises I remember. This is what I was taught, and opted to do the training there with Dorte and Mart Lawrence. And so that's where I met Rachel.
Oh, can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Back a little bit when you said that mm-hmm. this wasn't the way you thought you'd want to teach after you were mm-hmm. involved in a contemporary certification. What does that mean exactly?
The thing I love about classical is the connection and the progression. As an athlete, I soak up ownership. You know, you teach me how to do it so I can do it myself. And that's how I was first initially trained. Like, this is, if your shoulder feels like this, do this. The reason your shoulder is bad is because you're not using your core muscles right. I love the connection of that. And then when I went into contemporary, I felt like that connection wasn't as present. It's there, but it's not the foremost thought in one's mind. Like, to make it so that you can independently use this work in your own body for what you needed for, I found that that wasn't the prevalent thought. And I found that that's what I really liked about classical Pilates. And it wasn't until I did a private after giving birth where I couldn't use my right hip right in any way that I found Mart. And that was like, that connection was remade. And that's what I found was important for me.
Mart?
Mart Lawrence. She was,
and she had a studio
in San Francisco, the Pilates Center of San Francisco. You know, fantastic teacher, taught me a lot. And a lot of some of how I teach today is rooted in Martisms. So, yeah.
Rachel?
Well, I came to it also through kind of injury and issues. I was actually making and designing shoes in New York. Ooh. I know, so fancy. When some stuff started to happen to my back and I didn't know quite what was going on. A few months later, I moved back to San Francisco to deal with some family stuff. And I collapsed one day. And that's how I learned that I was severely hypermobile. I just thought I was, you know, super flexible. And isn't that a fun party trick? But no, it was not. I didn't fully dislocate. I subluxed both of my hips, my tailbone, my sacrum, L5, L4.
Oh my.
And it was just one of those things where you could kind of put Raggedy me back Ann. Together. Seriously, I was just, you know, I was like a really bad puppet. You kind of put me back together, but without a core, there were no strings. And so it was just like falling over. And I spent about 2 years basically becoming more and more immobilized and unable to walk most of the time. And it was a good day if I could stand up. That was an excellent day. I remember one morning where I remember thinking, you know, if I could just like wake up and think, oh, I'm so tired, instead of, oh my God, I'm in so much pain, I'll become a physical therapist. Like I sort of just made myself this promise. Turns out once I started to actually get better, it wasn't because of physical therapy. Like I did my physical therapy. They got me as far as they could. And then they said, hey, have you ever thought of trying Pilates? And within a few months of trying Pilates, I woke up and had that morning where I got up and I went, oh, I'm so tired. I have to go make coffee, and started to like shuffle my way over to the kitchen before I realized I was standing. And I was just like, what? So, and it just so happened that the place that I was doing Pilates was with Mart Lawrence. And right as it started to really soak into my body, she went, hey, you'd be a good teacher. Have you ever considered this? And it just felt like the correct sort of follow through of this little promise I made to myself. So I was like, this is how I'm going to do it. So that's how I ended up there. And Ray was training at the same time. And here we are.
Did you two like each other when you first met?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, it's funny. Our schedules didn't immediately overlap a ton. So she was just that really cool girl that I didn't get to work with very often. But like, you're always badass. I always like you.
Yeah. I loved her. We were actually a quad of Lewis and Mickey, and we had so Aww. Bonded. That's one of the other that team aspect. We're this little team of four trying to learn and get through this program, and it was hard. And it was, but yeah, me and Rachel had a lot of fun moments at Stables. Like, you know, our origin story on our website is extremely true. Like, we sat at that coffee shop and just talked about our experience a lot. And I found we shared a lot of the same loves, yeah. hates, frustrations, kind of breakthroughs. We shared a lot of it. And so I really always enjoyed all the time I spent with Rachel. So
yeah.
Is that how you decided to open a studio together?
Yeah.
With coffee or no, was it wine?
I don't know if you agree, Rachel. Yes. That would have been the best. We might have never opened this business if there was actual alcohol at that angry moment. It was we were really frustrated. And we had...
Mostly the frustration came from...
It was the fact that we were going to have to ask our client bodies to pay more money. And they didn't have it. And it's like, how am I going to finish this program? And I guess I have to...
Nah. Oh, wait a second. The bodies that you use to prepare you for your certification testing out, they had to pay?
They had to pay for...
I mean, a small amount.
It wasn't a big amount. So yeah, thank you, Rachel. That's true. So it was a small amount, but then even that was a little... For my bodies in particular, were a little bit of a challenge because we... Still had to, in some cases, like, you know, some programs, we've had to pay the rent for the time, and that was supposed to come from the body. then after we pass a certain level of a test, they needed to pay a little bit more, because I don't disagree with the mindset of like, we now are more knowledgeable, so thus someone should pay more. But it
are you pocketing the money, or is the studio?
The studio. I don't think I can't remember how the whole thing worked.
Wait. No, it was once we paid our rent, then a percentage of it went to the studio and a percentage went to us, which was, you know, I understand that that's not the problem. It was, I feel that particular conversation that we had, we were frustrated because we were both basically having to pay a lot and essentially take out loans, more or less, you know, to pay for our education. And then we both had clients who desperately needed this work. But when, as we progress from sort of apprentice to look at me, we're new teachers, you know, our prices had to go up, and both of us had different clients who went, I can't afford that. I really want to work with you, but I literally cannot afford, what was it, like $60 an hour or something. So between our sort of, you know, as teachers realizing we were struggling financially to, like, we couldn't have afforded our own services, you know, at full price. And then having clients say, we don't know how to keep this going, but it's very valuable for us. So it was kind of that, the intersection of those two financial discussions.
Yeah, I've kind of calmed down a little.
Again, yeah, I'm glad that we had coffee and not a lot of wine that day.
And in that discussion, you knew that you wanted to create some kind of model that would allow anyone who really wanted to learn the work and learn from you.
Pretty much. Could.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how do we make it more egalitarian? How do we make this work available to more people without watering it down, or in some way making it feel less valuable?
Yeah.
So was that model that you have now, the genesis of it, or the seed started with that coffee?
Yeah. My background is in kind of like creating lesson plans, curriculum, or that last over time. And one of the things with classical Pilates is there's a natural progression to it. Like, you know, with most bodies, they're going to progress through their pre-Pilates, their basic system, their intermediate, and for some advanced. And I felt like if my volleyball players, because again, this whole time I'm testing the system out with my own volleyball players, while I was a coach in terms of injury prevention, if I can teach a 19, 20 year old who has the attention span of Dory the fish, how to do intermediate mat on command, and not only do it, but do it well, and be able to modify it based on their body, based on injuries, why can't a full grown adult do it? That was my, and why is it that we're not being more transparent, leaving more information out there for them? Why can't we teach them the way we were trained as teachers, to train the body in front of us? However, just make it your own body. And that was where I sat down with Rachel in that conversation. It's just like, why can't they just teach us like they teach instructors? Why can't we give them, why isn't there a printout of the basic reformer order on day one here? These are the exercises. And now let's see how your body does it. And this is the ideal. And let's get you to this ideal if we can. I got frustrated so much by that. And the fact that I couldn't find someone who'd actually done it. I did a very exhaustive research, because to me, our first year, and I don't know, Rachel, if you can agree, but like, I believe if we were to put a title on what we were trying to do the first year of our business was, is this idea stupid? Are we stupid? Why is no one doing this? There's 85% of the people out there can afford this price point. And if we can make Pilates fit in this price point, that's a lot more people than the 15, maybe 20% that can afford to give me $1,000, $2,000 a month. That's easier. Why isn't anyone else doing this? And that was kind of like how the origin of this business came from. Was the first year was, is this stupid? Then we went, it's not. Okay, how can we make this a viable business? Yeah. And the moment we figured it out, COVID. But yeah.
Yep. The moment we figured out the business model, COVID started. Yeah. So that was fun. It was really great. It was good character building stuff, you know, because that's what you and I need, Ray, more character. To add to that, I would say that I think there is a general maybe I'm already kind of jumping the gun here, but I feel like there's this kind of general thing within at least classical Pilates, because I can only really speak to that because I am not certified in contemporary. You are supposed to keep certain amounts of the information secret because your value as a teacher is inherent to you knowing so much more. And I mean, obviously we have to know more, but I don't see that there's any harm in giving people lists of, you know, all the exercises and having people know the order and empowering them to understand why we're making the corrections that we're making. It doesn't need to be kept secret. We aren't worth less if they know why we do it. So I think that that's just, it's such a big problem in the industry that we kind of just set out to try and figure out, like, is there some way we can balance all of this out? Like, if we teach people to fish, you know, instead of handing them a fish, like, does that mean that they like fish less? And so far, I mean, we're 5 years in, people like fish plenty. We have no problems.
I love it. I would agree with you, because when I went through the program a long time ago,
you're sexy, Darren. No, don't let no one tell you you're not now. You look good.
You look great, girl. Gosh.
There was definitely something that was pervasive, but underneath that, it was just understood that the order that was given to us was only for us. And if you wanted to learn it, you needed to go through a program. Mm-hmm. Because there wasn't enough time spent on empowering us as teachers and what we actually have to offer our students. And it's way more than just teaching somebody the order. So If your students already have the order, it's already in their head. You can advance their practice instead of staying on the same page because they can't remember.
Exactly. We're not worth less if we empower our students. So I'm 100% with you on that.
Some of my favorite moments in the studio is when what we call an OG member is teaching a new baby. It's beautiful.
It's so cute. It's the most adorable thing in the world when somebody who's been working with us since day one, when we started testing this idea, that, you know, somebody new comes in and they're in a group class and they're trying to kind of figure out some pre-Pilates stuff. And the OG member leans over and goes, oh, no, you just kind of squeeze your knees together. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, it's so cute. And they're like, no, scoop more. No, don't tuck. Scoop. That's different than a tuck. And it's just like listening to them like train each other is really sweet, because it just like, oh, I'm a proud little mom. Mm-hmm. So it's we love seeing our people, you know, grow. It really is. We really do teach it like a educational institution, hence the name school.
Exactly. Now, if we're talking about the business side of the Pilates field, just the norm, not your unique business model, besides what you're offering, what do you think is lacking in the thought process in all the other studios that run based on just a very narrow parameters of what someone can expect if they go to the studio?
They kind of fall into one of two baskets. I haven't found anything. I felt like in between. Either it's catered to those who have enough discretionary income to put the $800+ per month, you know, into their privates, which I believe is that there's a place for that. Privates, duets, they have their trainer. That trainer works with them every single time. Versus the other in which I think more people of color, LGBTQ, those communities that are underrepresented, disregarded in the health fields and fitness, they're going to go more towards basket number two, which is the more watered down Pilates I find, which, because it's affordable, because it's the first class is free, and they don't know that, you know, and I'm going to might get myself in a little bit of trouble. I don't really consider, once you pass a certain teacher to student ratio, you can't call it classical. You just can't. Unless you're working with a massive group of advanced people, you're losing that detail, that moving from the center work. And I just don't see a place when you have 20 machines that aren't classical machines and one teacher where everyone, they're just calling out commands, how they're able to take that work and translate it to their life. And so when they run out of the money for that, or they injure themselves, or they don't feel the difference in that workout, then they stop doing it because the money matters so much. And so they don't get that access to health like the person that has a discretionary income And so they're stuck in this place of, I don't know really what I'm doing. I don't know how to take this work out of that studio. And so I find that those are the two models, and I find them to be a huge obstacle for underrepresented groups to find a safe place for them to experience their body and growing in their body, connecting to their body, and taking that and infusing it into their life where they're going to have lifelong health. That is the disconnect that I find is present in the current business model. Because, you know, you need to make a living. I'm not putting them down. At the end of the day, those teachers, those studio owners, they have bills to pay. They have families to feed. Inflation goes up. You got COVID happening, all this stuff. I get it. I am not knocking what they're doing. Me and Rachel's goal comes from a big place of positivity, because this works for us, and there's no reason why it can't work for others. And that means more people can have access to health. So for us, just like we're very transparent with our own members and how to get access to a more healthy life through classical Pilates, we eventually will, once we have everything ironed out and figured out and presented in a way that I think people can understand, we're going to go out there and present that to anybody who really, you want it and add this type of work to your studio. This is how we did it. Let us help you get your studio where you can be more inclusive, invite more people, share this work with more people. Because I think in the end, that's what all Pilates teachers really want to do. I mean, we didn't become Pilates teachers to be like, you know, rich.
It's a lovely idea.
It is, you know. So obviously anyone who's committed to teaching Pilates full time, I mean, they have to have that passion in their heart. I just want to I want to give them a way to get both. You can have gainful employment that you can sustain your life with and give Pilates to everyone. To me, it's a solution that doesn't come from scarcity. It comes from abundance. That's my feeling.
What happens if teachers do begin to lose their passion because of the financial hardships or challenges?
Well, that's quite a question. How do you maintain your passion for this? I mean, I would
say, okay, I'm going to jump in here, answer my own question.
Come on, Darian.
Really? I would say, first and foremost, to be able to keep giving your passion, you have to give it to yourself. And that means you have to have some kind of regular practice that you leave time for. Maybe it's not going to be a full-on reformer, etc., but finding exercises that still make your body feel good, that are still informative to you, because this is where you arrive at how you might cue a new student based on what you're doing in your workout. And there has to be that kind of interest, and the interest lights a fire under your passion. I remember a long time ago when I had my studio in Hollywood, this is 96, 97, and Romana had come out, and it was in 2005. This was at Romana's conference. It was at a hotel in Hollywood, not too far from my studio. And I was sitting watching Romana work with someone on the Cadillac, and Mari Windsor, do you remember her? She came up to me, and we sat down and started talking. And all I said was, my studio is not far from here. Why can't we get a group of teachers together so that we can work out together and learn from each other? It seemed like she had never even entertained that idea. And nothing ever happened. But in my mind, I was thinking, well, this is how we can keep our workout and our passion alive, by helping each other and being each other's eyes.
Absolutely. I 100%. I think that some of the problems with so many industries, but definitely with ours, is this sort of inherent sense of competition between teachers. Because again, if we're all going after the same, you know, 15% of the population, we have no choice but to sort of compete. But again, if we're operating from a place of abundance, then we are definitely, we share with other teachers. And God, every single time I learn something new from Ray or even one of our apprentices who goes, oh, I came up with a great idea. It's just, I am reinvigorated to, you know, learn more, try it, do this. And no Pilates studio is an island, or at least it shouldn't be. But here we are.
I think that, like, if you approach the work from a place of curiosity,
absolutely,
you're always going to have passion.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept, because I think in order for you to, for some, I guess what I'm going to put it, for some reason in this industry, we have to have no flaws. We have to be perfect because you're performing, you're on stage, you're being looked at from every angle. Don't do this. The master teacher in the room, look this way. That means this. They purse their lips like this. We add all this stress to a situation for a type of movement that's supposed to make us calm and content. And we don't actually, as teachers, live our lives that way. We are in a constant fight to be the best, because if you're the best, you're guaranteeing that you're going to make money. And we need to stop getting there by stepping on each other. And there is a way to get there through sharing. And that's the thing that I think me and Rachel are really working to bring into this industry. And it's scary because, you know.
No, it's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. If you're, as a teacher, if your ability to have a livable income is dependent upon that kind of, you know, whether or not you intend it to be this like gatekeeping, then how are we going to end up having a more welcoming fitness industry? Because I think everybody can acknowledge that there's some problems in the fitness industry, you know, maybe one or two, I don't know. And so it's
or
just
70 or 80,
yeah, this tip on the conservative side. Yeah, maybe. So just, it feels like there's no need to fight over this. We should be able to refill our own cup. I'm just really into using phrases today.
I love it.
Sounds fun.
I'm into it. I'm with it. Yeah. And I think that feeds into just our focus in our studio, kind of going from that traditional model to our model, it took us years to figure out how to even put our model into like one phrase. We're like, what do you do exactly? And we're like, we kind of walk them, we make them a personal path to complete independence. And we let them, they kind of graduate our program and then they can do open studio, or sometimes they buy equipment. And what we were trying to kind of describe to people is we're making every student into an instructor of their own body. And that's a lot of work. Boy, oh boy. Like, we believe in this massive continuity of care. So someone comes into our system as this, that's why we, you know, for us, they're not members, they're not clients, they're students. We end up assessing them, kind of setting their goals. We let them know from about 60% of our students, this program has a beginning, middle, and end. They are learning Pilates so they can. I'm learning Pilates so I can start hiking again so my hip doesn't hurt. I'm learning Pilates because I can't pick up my grandson anymore because my back hurts. And there's the people who are like our forever lifers. I don't think we're ever going to get them out of the studio. And I look forward to every argument before they start an open studio session of exactly what I think they should be doing in their open studio and what they think they should be doing in open studio. And it's a fun argument. When they're like, well, I really need my reformer today and I need to, and that's the thing, I think they're phrasing, I need my reformer today and I need to do, I'm going to do my shirt box on the barrel because I just need to get my back and lift through my chest and I'm going to do it that way. Why don't you earn it on the box and get your flow today? No. I'm not going to do that. That is a normal argument in our studio. And it almost feels like you're talking to a teacher.
They need to be recorded, these conversations.
Oh, they're hilarious. Some of them are, because we have a camera.
They're
downstairs.
Amazing.
But like watching someone, I'm teaching another one of our students who's about to, let's say, practicing for their test out of the intermediate system, is practicing their reformer. And literally I'll be like, hey, James, my hip, I know. It's a thing today. I think that says a lot to the differences in what we're trying to do.
Awareness.
That awareness and coming in. That's why I feel like the way we run our studio fits so, like, kind of just clinks together into serving those BIPOC and LGBTQIA+ communities, because you have to come in authentic. You have to come in present. And we so rarely in those groups get to be that in life. So what better to find a way to make something affordable, allow someone to be themselves, no code switching, all that stuff of the outside world stays outside of our studio door. You get to take care of you in a way that society doesn't really let you. And you get to empower yourself and take that work outside into that world that is going to try and hold you down, but you get to approach it with this gorgeous posture and breathe, you know, and take a real deep breath. So that might make you handle a situation and coming at it with negativity and anger and strife. You can sit back and be like, hey, that's you. That's okay. I don't need to let it affect me. I'm going to take a big, deep Pilates breath and move through it. I think that's the beauty in what we do in our studio to me. And it's affordable. So people can actually
do it.
Is it affordable because you have a membership base model?
Oh, that's a hard question, Darian. That's a hard one. It's affordable because I would think about it more like the student is paying tuition. So there's phases in someone's training, and we all can understand the phases as teachers. We have this time where we don't know what we're doing. I need a lot of help. Someone, you know, and people get, you know, they might start with a mid-level student dues where they're coming and they're getting a private a week and they're getting open. They're mainly doing mainly that and maybe a class or two. Then it's like, okay, you learned it. Now go take class and practice. We can do a whole nother podcast on the program design for how we run our classes. It's like, we don't run like, this is the reformer class. This is the wall unit. It's like a whole week is devoted. We're all learning reformer. We're all learning tower. We're all learning this so they can go through the progression, but it's extremely complicated. And that's as far as I feel like we should go in this because I need graphs to explain it. But they get a chance to experience all the pieces of equipment in our classes. And then they come back with that knowledge because we're being transparent. Here's the mat order. Here's your pre-Pilates workout. Let's film it. Now go home and practice it. Come back and tell me how it went. Oh, you felt this, this, and this. That's because you did this, this, and this. Try it now. Okay, now go back and try it again. So there's times where it's very private heavy. There's times where it's very, you need to practice it on your own heavy. There's times where it's really class heavy. Our student due system accounts for all of that. So it's kind of like they can bank a private they don't use this month and roll it into a private that they're going to need in 3 months. And then as people who were helping more minority communities, one of the things that gets every single one of them is you're not wasting money here. It's okay if you spend 2 weeks working on your mat at home and because your work schedule's crazy, it's okay because we're going to use all those credits later on when you're learning intermediate reformer. So it's not a use it or lose it system. That's a really hard thing for people to understand because they're so used in the fitness industry of being taken for a ride money-wise. Hopefully that makes sense. That's the best I can do.
It does make sense. And who wouldn't want to come to your studio?
Yeah, because I'm really entertaining too.
Boring people. And boring Rachel, people don't want to come to our studio.
Rachel has all the great analogies of, you know, reach, you know, you have a martini on your lap, do your spine stretch forward over it. I mean, that's
No. It's a cat on your lap and the cat's asleep and it's kind of a chonky cat. And so you don't want to get cat hair all over your ribs, but there's a martini ahead of you. So you have to spine stretch over the cat. Yum. Honestly, a client at some point came in with he'd gotten a new kitten and he was talking about how he was using his Pilates scoop to try to reach over the cat that was asleep on his lap. And I was like, that's exactly what I've been trying to teach you this whole time. Oh my God. Okay. Let's discuss this. So that's how those things
wonderful
come along.
I do have a question about what you're teaching your students. It sounds to me like you are educating them as to what we have been taught in our certification program, that there is a basic order, there is an intermediate order, there is an advanced order, and maybe one day, but not necessary at all, super advanced. It sounds like all of your students, if they wanted to, might go through a program and become certified to teach. Even though some aren't interested, it sounds like you are prepping them. Is that intentional?
Yes. Oh, very much so. That's absolutely by design. because on one hand, we do have a teacher training program, but...
Oh, can you say more about that? Do I know about that?
I don't know. Do you know about that?
You're funny, Rachel.
Ray, I'm going to pass that one over to you as the head of pedagogy.
The teacher training program, again, like as you, you know, pointed out, Darian, that as someone, about 40% of our students are like Pilates for life. They want to learn it. You can see them teaching already. Those are people who, once they graduate, I approach and say, once they test out of the high intermediate system, then you're automatically accepted into our teacher training program for the next year if you choose to join. And then for anyone coming into our teacher training program who hasn't been through our program, then there is a test in, because I feel like one of the issues from a pedagogist point of view is it's hard to be able to teach what I would call a clean program. If your students coming into that program, someone's at really has it, another person doesn't have it, another person is someone in between, another person has a hurt hip, what a cohort, I'm going to just dork out. You need your cohort to be as at the same place as much as possible in order for them to be able to learn with and from each other. And so it's a very long-standing teaching methodology in physical education. We just don't use it in Pilates. We're like, hey, you've never done Pilates before. Sure, why don't you learn Pilates, learn how to teach Pilates, like in the same time? Like, that's kind of like, you know, you've never flown a plane before. You're going to fly, you're going to learn how to fly and fly this plane. We can do it.
We see that.
That doesn't make any sense. So we actually set a very strict criterion on what you need to be to enter our teacher training program, so that as you're going through it, you already have the understanding that this is a place where you learn Pilates in your body first, so that you have a vocabulary to be able to then teach it. So we start, even though they're in their body, they're learning advanced while they're teaching pre-Pilates. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like they're not learning basic or learning pre-Pilates while they're teaching it at the same time. That's too much for the, that's just too much. I don't know any, this is the first place that I have ever been to where I've seen someone who's trying to do a basic reformer and they don't even know the order, but they're in a seminar. Like, well, no. We don't do that here. You need to know it before you can teach it.
You know, Joe said 3 years with him.
We said we're figuring out that it might be 5. So,
yes, I agree. I think 5 is a good number.
And even after they finish the first phase, because we have our two interns who have finished the first phase and they're allowed to teach basic classes, because they're in their body, they're approaching that high intermediate kind of range. They're now learning how to teach groups. They're learning how to teach multi-level.
Are they hired? Do they work for you?
They work. Because again, the fact that I don't know how to say it. In other programs, you gotta have like so much money. And for BIPOC and LGBTQA, that's not something that really exists. So, and also California law, like, you know, there's laws, there's labor laws. So once they graduate to a certain level, they are no longer considered apprentices. They're actually teachers in training, and when they teach, they get paid. So it's like, and it's not like they need to pay me for a rental. They're employees. They have a schedule. They get, and me and Rachel are there to help assist. I was helping one of our new teachers this morning with helping her structure her tower wall class so that she can be a better teacher. And that's part of what, but she's being paid for that time that she's putting in. It's not like, Does that hopefully that makes sense. And that to me is
everyone that comes to your studio to learn the classical Pilates work. They learn the order that we know that we abide by. Many of them may not want to take it to the next level, which is to be a teacher trainer. But they're still going to go through what you call a program, but it's not exactly a certification program like you went through, which I would love for you to talk about the differences, because you went to a program that's more traditional, like I did with Romana. This is someone who studied with Romana as well, correct?
Yes, yes. We are also trained in the Romana lineage as well. I think we've created a very different environment in our studio and in our teacher training program. On one hand, we did that by design. And on the other hand, I think Ray and I are both consistently shocked by how different our program is whenever we go anywhere else.
What, you mean because you let people shine?
You know, it's seriously, I'm like, tongue bitten.
You mean you let people have their own original ideas and you're open to them?
Oh, we definitely do. We do.
Damn, I just get in trouble today.
How do we describe our strange little program?
Well, the foundation is critical to then going off and interpreting the work as you see fit.
Yeah.
So the foundation is everything. And whoever is your first, you know, it's like your first boyfriend, girlfriend. They set the tone. So was it good? Was it good for you? You know?
Was it?
Well,
mine's was bittersweet.
Oh, mine was.
Wait, are we still talking about Pilates? Now rough. I have questions.
Yeah. No, mine's was bittersweet. Mine's was hard. While I was doing my teacher training program, I was also a full-time, highly competitive collegiate coach. And there's no balancing that part-time, having a real full-time. Like, I had kids who were like, you know, I got kicked out of my house. My dad just beat the living crap out of me. And then I got Mart texting me saying like, hey, where are you? And I'm like, I'm at St. Francis. One of my kids got 5150'd, so I can't come into the studio.
And what is that?
Oh, they got forced into observation. So they had a crazy moment. They had a bit of a breakdown. And they got arrested, and the police put them in a mental institution. And they're trapped there for 48 hours. They're not getting out. And so I have, you know, and I'm only resource because their family's kind of off the rockers. And then I'm trying to do this Pilates training, and there wasn't a lot of leeway. It was like, Pilates needs to be important to you. Did you miss the 5150? Do you know what that means? I mean,
She didn't know what that was.
Yeah. So it's like, and I think, I just came from a very different lived experience. And so aside from having a very different body type, it was just really, that was the hard part, kind of learning how to navigate and work within the system that I knew you had to appease, and you had to just appease it to get through it. And I hate to say that I gritted my teeth and got through it. And there's some great parts of my training. I loved large sections of my training, but it'd be no different from walking in. I'd have to present a presentation to a boardroom of all old white men. It felt the same. You know, it wasn't like it was bad. I'm not trying to put anyone down, because I know that like how a brown person experiences the world is very different from how someone who doesn't have any of like these obstacles that like black women have to face. But it was a very similar environment. And so we strive to make our learning environment. That's why I say, like, I want people to be their authentic self and honor their lived experience in our studio. And so I really make a point of that. And that comes from the fact that we are creating on the student end, the dues for our program are very affordable. It's in a range that someone can handle. Our teacher trainer end, we're in the last phases of the program becoming nationally accredited, which means someone can go get a FAFSA, take out a CalD grant, and pay for their education. So that to me is a really important component, because unless you have $20,000 and a lot of free time, this career path is not open to you. And you kind of have to have like that accessible income or have a rich spouse in order to do this full time, because your incomes fluctuate so much. So we really, that would be the big difference, is we made the student program affordable for pretty much anyone. I believe our new virtual studio that we're opening another month or so, the dues are $150 a month, and they get a virtual private. So they're getting that one-on-one contact and that personalization. To me, health is a right on both ends of our program. We make sure that people have access to health, regardless of their background, their income. And then on top of that, we're going to respect where you come from, and we're going to help you be your authentic self, and we're going to honor who you are in that moment in our program, which I believe is what Pilates is about to me.
That's exactly. I would absolutely say the same. I think for a form of movement that really prioritizes the individual, it's fascinating to me how much the industry is not set up to facilitate learning for, you know, a variety of individuals, either as teachers or as students. So I think the sort of gap that we're trying to cross and, you know, create a little bridge, very cute, adorable little bridge, a very rainbow colored bridge across, that sounds way more sad.
No. You got it.
This is we're just trying to bridge that gap and try to make it so that there isn't this sense of I have to put on my Pilates face and I have to, there's a difference between leaving your cares outside and focusing on yourself. There's a difference between that and feeling like you have to put on a different face to go into your studio to work out and attempt to focus on yourself. You know, it's like that, there's a subtle difference there. And I feel like we are trying to make sure that you can be here, focus on yourself, regardless of who you are and regardless of the state of this crazy country and the planet, just you are here. This is about you, whatever comes up.
I think you're promoting Contrology, because Contrology isn't just the exercises. It's an entire lifestyle. It's a system of living.
Exactly. Yeah, it really is, especially in a world where we don't have a lot of control. So I don't know.
As you know and have experienced, there is a lot of body shaming in our society, and definitely in the Pilates community. I know you both have had certain experiences. What are your thoughts about this issue? And what do you think could happen or take place to give people, first of all, the people who feel like they don't have a size zero lithe body, they've been given permission to practice Contrology. And then for those who don't necessarily know they're shaming others that don't have that specific look, what can you say to those types of teachers? They need to step back and reevaluate what they think the physical body is about.
Hold on, first part.
And if you have an individual story that you could share with us in terms of your body might not look like it's supposed to look, whatever's supposed to be, whatever that look is, and how you handled it. And did you handle it or did you just suck it up?
I volunteer to do the second part of it. Go, Rachel.
I'm sure something will come to mind in terms of actual events, but to be honest, sometimes when those things happen, especially when I was a student,
you block it out.
I block it out because I don't have time to handle that at that moment. I think that as wonderful as social media can be, in a weird way, things like Instagram and TikTok and whatnot have done a huge disservice to the Pilates world in that the showmanship of beautiful, elegant, quote unquote, Pilates bodies, that is what you see. You see like generally white, very thin, or, you know, thin, but curvy in the socially appropriate ways, so to speak. Like those are the people that you see performing elegant Pilates online, and that's lovely. But real Pilates is hard. Real Pilates is hard and sweaty. It's not about how you look, you know? So I've found that one of the things I feel that I try to do as a teacher, and that I think we've been pretty successful in teaching our apprentices, is to not be afraid of bodies. Like you don't have to, if somebody has body fat, you don't have to treat them like they're somehow different. You know, you don't have to touch them differently. You probably want to have some conversations about consent and things like that, but you would have that with anybody. But don't be afraid of people who have a body type that's radically different than yours. But to that end, I feel that a lot of teacher training programs don't address the need for apprentices to learn how to handle other different body types, or even, like, for lack of a more soft way of saying this, they don't understand how to see through body fat. If the person doesn't have visible hip bones, we're not necessarily taught how to see things.
Not taught at all. And what are you talking about? You don't need to be kind about this. We were never taught that.
We are not taught that. And it's really distressing because it also means that we're going to make our clients uncomfortable, you know, and most people in the US, especially if we're going after that larger population that Ray and I are very specifically designed this program to go after, like, you know, instead of 15% of those people with the 85, if we're going after that population, it's really important that we revamp the image of the quote unquote Pilates body that society has. Like, I have definitely, when being asked for the sort of elevator pitch of what we do, when I'm talking to a room full of people or whatever, I'm just going to say it without actually censoring myself. I'm like, we make Pilates something that isn't just for skinny, rich, white bitches, because they have plenty of places to go. And, you know, they're welcome, but it's just, we are the little studio of, you know, the island of misfit Pilates people. And I think it's so important that you can come in here and realize that we're not going to say fat as a bad thing. We're not going to talk about you have to earn your cookies. You know, it's just like, no, eat your damn tacos and come and do Pilates so that you don't hurt yourself when you bend over to pick up that margarita that you just, you know, it's like, we're very real life about it here. Is that answering the question?
Yes. And on top of all that, you have pancakes and Pilates.
Yes, we do. We have teasers and tacos.
We're doing beers, barrels.
Yes, beers, barrels, barbecue. We're very excited about that one. But yeah, I'm in the middle of getting a certification for nutrition because I want to offer a very shame-free, food-positive viewpoint towards what you put in your body, because that's something I struggle with personally. And, you know, as somebody whose weight has fluctuated and at 6 feet tall, I'd rather stick out in a crowd. You know, I want to develop a space where discussions about food and weight and health and whatnot are just much healthier. Like, not healthy as in more lettuce, healthy as in we're supposed to have body fat. We're supposed to. Like, I don't like how society and the fitness industry treats it as though I am way too large to be doing Pilates, that my goal in doing Pilates should be to lose weight. I'm like, but it's not. I'm just trying to keep my spine in one piece. And if I lose weight, cool. But yeah, I don't know. Now I'm rambling.
Mm-mm. Keeping your spine in one piece is where it's at.
Big fan. Huge fan.
Rayana?
Well, I'll take that second half. Okay. I feel like Rachel Rockstar that first half.
Thanks, babe.
The second half, you're welcome, sexiness. What I would say to a teacher who hasn't had that experience yet, because again, I agree, it's not given to us. The term normal needs to be stripped from all Pilates training.
Hear, hear.
It just needs to go. That we're going to work with what happens in normal bodies first. To say normal means there's abnormal. So you're automatically in your teacher training program telling that teacher who's like not, doesn't fit that normal mold, that they're not normal. So then it's like, well, what the fuck am I doing? What am I doing here? Sorry, I knew a curse word would come out eventually. So that needs to go bye-bye. And I think all Pilates teacher training programs need to reevaluate, are you really creating the best teacher if you're only teaching one body type that they can teach? If you're the best teacher can teach, we say it all the time, train the body in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you can't train a woman, a female presenting a body that has a size double H chest and has a little bit of a gut and has a rock star badonkadonk and thick legs, and you're just like, well, we're just going to take the reformer out in third gear to make space for your flesh. It's like, that is, you're approaching the whole thing in the wrong way. And I know, and I've seen it, and I have personally felt it myself, how my presence makes a teacher who's not trained to teach my body immediately uncomfortable. And then there you can see them trying to fumble around with it. And then it turns out, I just don't know what to do with all of your body, you know, and they're trying to find these fun euphemisms. Or my personal favorite is complimenting the clothes I'm wearing. Wow, your clothes look really cute. It's like, thanks, you know, AKA those clothes don't make you look fat. You know, so it's
I've watched people like respond to you that way. Mm-hmm. They're sort of afraid to touch.
You mean when you're taking a lesson?
Yeah, in a teacher training program, if I'm going back for like some training,
I've never done that.
not like,
My
well,
hands are
yeah,
all over
that's why
you.
we love you so
Not
much.
you.
So no, I've been in situations where I'm in a teach in a tr training environment and a teacher training environment, and we're to break out into groups, and you can almost feel like that's the last kid I'm picking for kickball. When the funny thing is, most of the time, especially in the latter edges of once I started retiring from coaching, I am the most educated. I am have the most teaching experience, and you might want to sit and have a moment with me because you might learn something. Or the other thing is the assumption that my body dictates my fitness level and my knowledge level. I've had someone who hasn't even graduated a program try and tell me how to teach someone something, and I sat there and I was like, and it'd be different. I'm a scientist. I can except being wrong, and I don't care who it could come from, someone who doesn't done Pilates a day in his life versus someone who's done Pilates forever. If you're right, you're right. If you're wrong, you're wrong. Let's see what happens. But I swear this person's only feedback was lift your chest. Just was finding something to say in order to say, you're not qualified, you be quiet, because have you looked at your guts lately? And you can feel it. You can feel it in the room. And I just think that teacher training programs need to address that and need
That's to
to.
say nothing of trans bodies, and we really are not trained to be aware of any body type other than skinny, white, and usually feminine.
I guess that to kind of take it full circle, because by ignoring different body types, you are ignoring every black, most black body types. Hey, this is how I came out. I got a bum. I got a booty. I may have boobs. It's a thing. And depending on the day, it is. Ignoring the male body type, that's a specialty. When is that a specialty? The ballet dancer body is the ideal. And the other thing is the like a kind of like a sports way. I get it. Someone whose body is kind of built like an ant, like you have lots of muscle but not a lot of weight. It's not, just physics wise, this work is going to be a different type of challenge for you. And some challenges are going to be easier. The kind of like the obstacles might be a little bit easier. If you walk in and you've done a crap ton of training of dance training, I get how this work, the way it's presented, I think is easier for someone who comes from a dance background to translate. I feel like as teachers, we need to approach the work for that individual and teach people how to individualize their training for the person in front of them, regardless of the physical background they're coming from. And that's the problem. We're trying to chunk people, large groups of people, into one thing of normal, not normal. And that's the problem to me. And so that just needs to, if we change that, I feel like we would be in a much better place. We'd be a much more, all studios would be inclusive. Because we get a lot of people who like, I went to this studio and I felt super uncomfortable. And the fact that I saw you on the website doing a teaser, because I'm a gorgeous chocolate fluff black woman who can rock star her teasers when she feels like it. And it's automatically disarming.
Because she
People,
has
it's a
enough
beautiful
stretch in her
thing.
low back now,
I
finally.
know. Found that low back because of you. So like, I just think that we all need to see ourselves in this work, and that's there's not enough pictures of and images to kind of circle back to what Rachel was saying. There's not enough images and videos of people doing this work that have different body types, or the reverse happens. I don't. It was March Madness. I did a swimming on top of a barrel. It got way too many views. That was way too many, just because I did swimming. And if I swear, if it was like your quintessential like. Female
I mean, even if
presenting
it was
thin body
me,
doing it,
even if
no
it
one
was
would have
me,
cared.
like,
But because, yeah, it's just because, wow, look at that large black woman doing that on a barrel. It was just like, that's not the reason that something should go viral to me. So that's what I think needs to, that's what I would tell the people right here.
Well, the conversation has started, or it continues, and you two are helping. I wanted to ask you in closing, what are your future plans for Pilates School
Beyond
San
world
Francisco?
domination?
Yes.
Oh, well, That's way more complicated.
But Pinky, where are you going to get an elephant around this time of night? I'm done.
Well, Ray, you're CEO. I feel like this is you.
I'm supposed to be a CEO right now. Got it. Both me and Rachel, short term is to really launch the teacher training program and launch our virtual studio. Once we do that, we want to kind of ride that wave until we have our own hub location. That's kind of like our goal between now and 7 to 10 years from now. And then the big goal is once kind of permeated ourselves and a bunch of other studios and kind of shown that this system can work and works for other studios to incorporate within their traditional models, then I would love to see Pilates in every public education program in America.
That's right.
From starting from elementary school, like very young, get them doing mat.
Right on.
I would like for a regular high school, you know how every high school has a weight room? I feel like every high school should have a Pilates studio. Then that generation would then go to a gym and be like, okay, that's the weight room. Where's your Pilates studio? That's just a normal. And it's, and they like the expectation of, I was going to go work out. Were you going to do your basic reformer? Yeah. And then I was going to lift some weights, maybe do a little cardio after. I want it to fall off of people's tongues that simple. The fact that everyone can go into a weight room and do squats and do this, and there's videos and stuff like that. Yet classical Pilates, people don't even know the differences or what it's just too much out there and it's all discombobulated. I want to pull it all together and put it in schools. That is like what I would love to, that's kind of like what I want to do in my retirement. It's a big one.
That is the goal. Yeah. I mean, imagine how different both of our stories would have been. I mean, we wouldn't have ended up here, but how many lives of all of our clients would have been changed if they had learned this early on? You know, it really isn't the sort of arena of the wealthy and the few and the, you know, the skinny. It
and
really
the celebrities.
Should be something that, exactly. It's something everybody would benefit so deeply from.
And do.
It really
who
is.
Who practice that. Now. And who will. Right. When they decide to include Pilates into
Agreed.
Their workout program.
I've never seen classical Pilates go bad for anybody when it's taught right. Yeah, I have to add
when
that
when it's taught
comma.
Right.
Or Pilates for all.
How do people contact you?
Our website. And that's a marketing question. Go, Rachel.
Well, what is your website?
They can contact us. Via our website, PilatesSchoolSF.com. We're also on Instagram under the same, PilatesSchoolSF. We're also on Facebook. I'll be completely honest, we are not the most active on social media these days because we are teaching and teaching teachers who are teaching and teaching teachers, et cetera. So we're a little slow on that, but the website is kind of the hub for everything. So you can come and check us out and see what we're about and ignore the typos because we're cute like that.
Do you have open house?
Our social events. Our next social event is July 15th.
Yeah.
I believe so. It is on the website anyway. Our social events are open to the public. You can go in and sign up. And there are these great little where we combine Pilates food and people who love Pilates. And you get a chance to really come in and feel the community that we're building and get a chance to try some Pilates out. I believe Beers, Bears, and Barbecue is, we're going to focus on all the work that you can do on a spine corrector, a small barrel, and a large barrel. And then we're going to put some delicious, either, you know, meat or mushroom, deliciously barbecued and smoked mushrooms or meats in your mouth, and then have some delicious beers and have some conversation about Pilates.
Wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
So it's all, those are always open to the public. As well as anytime we can finagle your pretty Miss Gold to come down and teach a thing.
Come and hang out.
Yeah.
So those are also great events to come with.
You had me at beer.
That's all it took this whole time.
I'm very easy.
Oh, then I feel like you would love it. Yay.
Thank you so much for your time and for all of your dreams and your inspiration and the ideas you have around what's possible with Joe's work.
Aw, thanks. Thanks so much.
Love you. You're very welcome.
It's lovely to talk to you about all this, because mostly we talk to each other about it.
Well, now you'll be talking to my listeners. All Things Pilates is produced, written, edited, and hosted by me, Darian Gold. Mastered audio mix by Fabian Romero. This season, we have all original music by AKA Johnny. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, you have the opportunity to support it for as little as $3 a month. You'll see the link in the show notes, and just know that every dollar helps me continue to bring you the most interesting guests in the Pilates community. Real beauty lies underneath the skin, no matter what skin tone you have. It's your honesty and compassion that shine through to the surface. When we practice contrology, from Joe's perspective, he was only interested in your making room for his method. I can't imagine he cared what you look like. One of the best things about his teachings is no matter what personal problems we all might be dealing with, when we focus on our Pilates practice, everything else just seems to fall away. Thanks so much for tuning in, and see you back here in a couple of weeks for another episode of All Things Pilates.